What do we hold on to? Frank Donovan mentioned in his prayer about things that we'll be facing coming up as we go along in this world. He mentioned about asking God for God's Spirit to be with us, to enable us to navigate through these things as we go forward. He didn't use the word navigate, I've added that. But what are we seeking? And what I'm trying to emphasize today is the idea of where are we going and where are we intended to go? I hope that's not just double talk, but what is in your mind's eye when you focus on the things of God? And where are we headed? Where are you headed? What do you keep in your mind? When persecution comes on us, and let's say they take the Bible, they being the powers that be, and this, whoosh, that's going to go in the garbage. Okay, I don't have that to look at anymore, because you're in a place where you don't have access. And what do you have with you? What did you keep in mind? What is in your head? And that's what we have to be concerned about. Well, today, I'm looking at this one verse. I've been doing a series of messages on this verse, Revelation 21 and verse 21. So we'll go there and get a basis of bearings of where I'm going with this. I've been trying to build an understanding, for this verse tells us of the 12 gates. Revelation 21 and verse 21 says, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold like transparent glass. And you go, wow, what does that mean? So I've been trying to go through this verse. We looked at the gates. We looked at the pearls. Today we're going to look at the last four if I get to it. Hopefully we'll get to it in this message. But it seems to me that this is, of course, future. This is a time yet ahead. It's a spiritual, when I gave the message about the gates, the person that one of the commentaries mentioned, it's a symbolic thing. These are symbolic things that are mentioned here. They're not necessarily literal, physical things. It's not a physical street, a physical pearl, whatever. These are spiritual elements to keep in mind. Where are we going? And it seems like this is where we're going is what Jesus is offering to us. The very thing he wanted for us to understand and to grasp is where he's taking us. Right? Do you all have that in mind, where Jesus is taking us? You may not know specifically what that is. It's a spiritual thing. But here we see an example of physical things. He has to write in the scripture words that there are physical things. But he's trying to describe something very, of course, spiritual and fantastic. So he's doing the best he can with words, you know, to put these concepts. So I'm trying to bring the concepts out for us by looking at them and helping us to grasp onto the mental ideas that we keep with us. Now, okay. So we're going to go and see Jesus. We're going to go be with Jesus. Inevitably, our goal is to become spirit beings entering into where Jesus will be. Jesus said in John, we recorded in John 14, that he went to make a place for us. In my Father's house are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you. And wheresoever I be, you will be there too. Where is that be? Where is that? Where is that? What is it? It's a spiritual entity. We are in the process of going to that place that he has reserved. I've set a place for you, and you're going to be there in that place. And this is what I don't know, but is the place beyond the gates? Are the gates the entryway into this entity that he has, this goal, this purpose that he has? So if that's so, we're going there to be with the King, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, as we're told that Jesus is. And so when we go there, how would you go? If you were to go to a new king, new King Charles III, or any other king, a human king, how would you go there? What kind of attitude would you have to go and visit this person of great royalty and of importance? Well, for Jesus, he's the King of Kings. What could we possibly give him to honor him as a gift to bring? So it isn't so much the what the item might be, but the attitude in mind that we have. What is the attitude we have? You want to give it. You want so much. What can I possibly give you to honor you? Well, if we go to Matthew 2, let's go through some of these, kind of try to understand this attitude if we can. Matthew chapter 2. Here we're talking about the Magi, and we'll go to, we'll show the picture of the camel train here. They weren't dressed like these fellows, I don't suppose. But nevertheless, in verse 11 of Matthew 2, "And when they had come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh." They came from a long way away. They had known, that's a study in itself to understand what did these men understand about Jesus. All that they had were the things written in the Old Testament. It was the only scriptures then. And they read the prophecies of this person would come, this representative of God. And he would be born, he would become a king. Book of Isaiah mentions that and so forth. So they must have had in their idea, we're going to be for the king. This man is, this little baby represents this kingship. So they're going and they're bringing him the best of gifts. Right? So the first gift was the gold, and that represents his kingship. The frankincense represented his priesthood, and the myrrh was about his death, that he would be embalmed. That was an embalming situation. Anyway, I got distracted by those guys. So that's the kind of thing I'm trying to emphasize, is the attitude of mind. So if we go to Genesis 4 and verse 4, I want to try to emphasize at the moment the mental picture, the spiritual entity of our minds. What do we have in our minds? Why are we doing what we're doing, and how we want to honor? So if we go to Genesis 4 and verse 4, we see a clue about that with Abel. Verse 4 of Genesis 4 says, Abel also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering. The attitude of mind here is he wants to give him the best. It isn't second rate. He wants to give him the best. And there's a mindset there. In Exodus 25 in verse 2, God tells them at the time what they should be thinking. 25 and verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering. From everyone who gives it willingly with his heart, you shall take my offering. Do you think that the men who, those magi, came across the desert, was it in their heart to give him the best? Was it in Abel's heart to give him the best? And in 1 Chronicles 29, verse 3. Moreover, because I have set my affection on the house of my God, this is David speaking, I have given to the house of my God over and above all that I have prepared for the holy house, mine own special treasure of gold and silver. David wanted to give him the best. If he could have given him more, he would have. You know, tremendous attitude. And then in 2 Corinthians 9, this is a famous verse. We read it every year at the feast when we're giving offerings. We read it because it tells us an attitude to have. In verse 7 of 2 Corinthians 9, so let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. So, when we're going to hopefully go, if I'm understanding, through the gates and to meet Christ, do we go with the attitude, I want to give you every possible thing I can? I want to give you the best. I want to be worshiping and honoring you totally. So, we have a picture here of these people meeting one another. I would like to us to think about something. I hope we can grasp some of it. If you think you have to dwell on it, think about it, and meditate on it. What would it be like to be Jesus and his people are arriving? Okay? If you could think of that. Jesus has been waiting for how many thousand years for the arrival of his saints to come to him? After he descends and stands on the Mount of Olives and the resurrected people are changed and they're going to go to, what must it be like for him to wait for us? And here we come, Abraham and Abel and all the people that are going to be there. You read through Hebrews 11, you read the chapter of all those who are going to be in his kingdom. And you're now him in a way, in a sense of waiting. This lady apparently was there at home. She went to the airport. The other lady came in from the aircraft, coming down the jetway. She came down and they were waiting. She was waiting so much for her to arrive. Maybe they haven't seen each other for a long time. And when they finally embrace, oh, I've been waiting so long for you. I'm so glad and happy to see you. We rejoice together. What must he feel like? And so, is he expecting our arrival? You bet. Oh boy, is he ever. Probably can't wait, you know, probably, oh, when, how long will it be when that comes about? But what about for us? We're the one arriving. We're the one on the plane who arrived and we came to the, and the person's waiting for us. What do we have to give them? You know, well, let's go back to the Revelation 21 and verse 21, and we'll go through these items it's mentioning here. And the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. What must it have been like to be there? And what are the characteristics does it show? And can we learn from this? And what can we put into ourselves to have? So, the first one is the street. I have in here the street. And in the Greek word for the street is plateia, a plateia, a wide plat or a place from Strong Concordance. It's like an open square or a way, a place where people could assemble. A place, yeah, I have a picture here. This is in Europe someplace, don't know where it is. Some of you geography buffs might know where this is, but it doesn't matter. The point is, down here in the lower left corner are people gathering in this plateia. It's a place to gather, a place to assemble, a place where people are doing fun things, having a good time. Well, in Mark 6, if we go to Mark chapter 6, Mark chapter 6, when Jesus was there in Jerusalem, or any place where, I don't know exactly where he was at this moment, but he passed by, and the men were out there. A guy was out there waiting for him to pass by to be healed, so that he could be healed. Jesus came by, Mark 6 and verse 5 and 6. And now he could do no mighty work there except that he laid his hands on his few sick people and healed them, and marveled because of their unbelief. And he went about the villages in the circuit teaching. People were out in the street to come pass. When he passed by, they could be healed. Let's see. Oh, that's not exactly what I wanted. It is, but it isn't. That's okay. Let's go to 2 Chronicles, running out of time. 2 Chronicles 32, another example of something that happened at a city square. 2 Chronicles 32, verse 6 to 8. 2 Chronicles 32, 6 to 8. This is talking about the time of Hezekiah. And Judah was being confronted by the Assyrians. And Sennacherib was going to come and take over the cities and so forth. Anyway, this is what Hezekiah was telling the people. And he set military captains over the people, gathered them together to him in an open square of the city gate, and gave them encouragement, saying, here's the point that we have to have. What is our mindset? Remember I was saying? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid, nor dismayed before the king of Assyria, nor before all the multitude as with him. For there is more with us than with him. And with him is an arm of flesh, but with us, the Lord our God, to help us and to fight our battles. And the people were strengthened by the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. What do you suppose Jesus is going to be saying at that square there in Jerusalem when we're there with him? Similar things, perhaps. What is our job? What will become the purpose for why we're being called? And when we can help people by the thousands, perhaps. Is there a chance you could be a little afraid, a little frightened? Kind of like, oh boy, I didn't expect all this. But what do? We trust our Lord, our God, to help us and to help us with whatever we have to confront. Remember I said at the beginning, we're going to be suffering some persecutions and things, right? How do we go forward? How do we keep track of where are we going? You keep in mind the attitude, look, we have a great purpose in mind. We're here for the keeps. We're here for the duration. And I signed up for this, and I'm not going to turn back. If I can help it, I don't want to. Anyway, the second was the city of Revelation 21. 21 was the next was the city. And the city word there, the Greek, is polis, P-O-L-I-S, or polis. We have Minneapolis and Indianapolis. These suffixes are on those words. Primarily, it's a town enclosed with a wall. This is from Vine's Expository Dictionary. Primarily, a town enclosed with a wall, also describing the heavenly Jerusalem, the abode and community of the redeemed. Aren't we considered the redeemed? Here's an illustration of the old Jerusalem. Is it a place similar to that, that the people were there in the old days? Is it an illustration of what it might look like in that day, a physical rendition? But we're not looking for a physical one. We're looking for a spiritual one. But when you go to Hebrews 11 and verse 10, we learn a little bit about Abraham. Hebrews 11 and verse 10. He says, "For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God." What is this city? Marvelous. And what do I have? Hebrews 12 and verse 22 to 24. Hebrews 12, 22 to 24. "But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to God, to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel." It refreshes, goes right back to Abel. Abel had whatever he had in mind of who he was serving, when he understood that he should be giving the best of the offerings. Where did Abel get that idea? But he did, somehow. He's looking forward to another day. We're looking forward to another day also. And now the gold. I have a picture of some gold. But again, it's just physical. It's a physical thing, the gold bars. They're worth nothing in this item that we're talking about. The gold, to me, represents the best. What would you give him? What would you give somebody? Now, the Magi who came from the east to bring to the child Jesus, they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They brought him the best. So it represents a state of mind. Psalm 72. Psalm 72. And verse 15. "And he shall live, and the gold of Sheba will be given to him. Prayer also be made for him continually, and daily he shall be praised." And then Isaiah 60 and verse 6. Isaiah 60 and verse 6. "The multitude of camels shall cover your land, the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah. All those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall proclaim the praises of the Lord." They're bringing the best, bringing something glorious. And I have an idea, it's just an idea, because we're talking about something spiritual. We're not physical gold. But do you know when sometimes you or someone, a person you might know of, a lady who's done particularly well for her family, for her neighbors or whatever. What is one of the descriptions we might say of the person? It's just a phrase we would tend to use. Wow, you know, she just has a heart of gold. One who serves like she does. She prays for people. Saying that you have a heart of gold often is a very complimentary statement to make about somebody who does wonderful things. It's not literal gold. It's a state of being. Okay? And then the transparent glass. Transparent glass. What could that be? And the Greek word for that is diaphero. Diaphero. And it has this definition, to bear through from the strongs. That is, to transport, to be more excellent, and to be of more value. Well, I thought of to bear through. What does that mean? What is he talking about, the bear? Is that like a grizzly bear growing through the woods? No, I don't think it's a grizzly bear. What about if you go down here to 16th Street and you turn left, you're going to bear right, you're going to bear left? No, not that kind of bear. It's what kind of bear is he talking about? So let's go to John 15. John 15 and verse 2 and 5. John 15, 2 and 5. It says in verse 2, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears much fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. And verse 5, I am the vine, and you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, bears much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. Isn't that our objective, is to be bearing fruit? So, is the bearing the fruit of Jesus? Does it look like, if we have the picture of the wine, you can see through the wine glass, you can see through the wine and see the ocean out there in this particular picture. And this is where I just wonder what this must be like, to have this transparency. And one thing I would like to suggest, and you have heard it said, I'm one of my friends has said, and she had it said of her one time, that when she came in and the other people were noticing it, and they said of her, you know, you're a Christian. Why did they know that? Because of her behavior, her attitude, her tone, and so forth, the way she carried herself. And if you or I are doing the things of Christ, they really are in us, even now in our physical life, the people look and see that and they go, you know, I see Christ in you. That's the best. That's what we're looking for. That's what we're trying to achieve. When he said, let your light shine, you become transparent, I think. I look at you, I see through you, and I see Christ in you. Isn't that what we're trying to do, is to represent Jesus Christ by how we are? And is that what the transparent? I don't know, actually. I may be, someday I'll come to a different understanding of that. But for now, it just seems to me, when you enter the gates and you're there and you're acceptable there and you become part of that team, you represent Christ. And so another element to that, perhaps, is you become a spirit being. And then when you're a spirit being, what do you become? Invisible. Right? So, I'm looking through you. That was a Beatles song. I'm looking through you. You're not the same. Anyway, that was a Beatles song. But if people can look through you and see Christ, awesome. So, much awaits us, brethren, and that's why I'm saying, if we keep these things in mind, where we're going and why we're going there and what this is about, we have to carry that with us. have to carry it with us every day.